Hello, everyone. My name is Troy Swanson. I'm the Library Department Chair here at Moraine Valley, and I'm joined today with Reverend Brian Sauter. We're going to have a conversation about environmental justice and some of the work that's being done out there that does connect into different parts of our curriculum. So, Brian, thanks for being here today.
It's great to be here.
Just a quick background. Reverend Sauter serves as a president and executive director of Faith in Place, a nonprofit empowering people of diverse faiths and spiritualities to be leaders in advancing environmental and racial justice by providing resources to educate, connect, and advocate for healthier communities. Reverend Sauter is ordained by the Mennonite Church USA. He serves also as an adjunct professor at the McCormick Theological Seminary and the Garrett Evangelical Theological Seminary. He's taught classes in public ministry for future clergy and faith leaders. He has a list of credentials, but a couple highlights. He's an award recipient of the University of Illinois Business School's Community Scholar, Central Illinois Business 40 Under 40 winner, and a 2019 Midwest Energy News' 40 Under 40 winner. So it brings an impressive list of credentials to us. So thank you for that. And, Brian, maybe just to get us started, could you tell us a little bit just about yourself and about your role at Faith in Place and about the organization?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's great to be with everyone. I live in Chicago and I have a wife and twin daughters. So my twins are 2.5 years old, so they keep me extra
busy.
busy and parenting and learning about parenting and doing all those sort of things. But I spend my day running Faith in Place. I've been the president and CEO of Faith in Place for 10 years. Faith in Place, best way I think to describe it is we have this vision that when you walk into any community, and you see somebody on the street, you're like, hey, who's leading the way for environmental activism, environmental justice, environmental programming in this community? We want the person on the street to say, you know, check out what the local mosque, synagogue, church, temple, parish, you name it, the people of faith and the faith institutions are really leading the way for care for our common home. So we are a network of those faith institutions that say, yep, we agree with that vision. And they sign up with us to be part of our community. And then we begin walking alongside them to do environmental programming, environmental advocacy, so that they become the environmental leaders in their neighborhoods. It's great work. We have a very robust network of faith partners all across Illinois, not just in Chicago, but Central Illinois, Southern Illinois, Northern Illinois. We also work with organizers and staff in Wisconsin and Indiana. So we're kind of a three-state network of people of diverse faiths coming together around the common air that we all breathe, the land we all share, the water we all drink, and as people of faith, working on preserving that, taking care of that, but also advocating for environmental justice in that work.
It really is impressive. And one of the reasons, that we wanted to invite you to share with our students is that connection across faiths. I think it's very impressive. And I think, obviously, you're doing such great work. How did you come to Faith in Place? Did you found Faith in Place, or did you come to it as an existing organization?
Yeah, so it comes out of a personal passion for me. I grew up in a very religious family in Central Illinois. I loved being out in the woods growing up, and that prompted me to go to the University of Illinois in Champaign-Urbana, where I studied environmental sciences with a focus on fish and wildlife biology. But as I was sitting in classes learning about environmental justice, learning about climate change, I started asking these questions like, wait, my faith is very important to me. And yet these injustices I'm learning about in this curriculum is startling, but the two aren't talking to each other. I come from a faith tradition that taught one of our main roles in life is to serve the least of those among us, to be active in supporting vulnerable populations. And as I was learning, though, in school about the impacts of climate change being the most severe for vulnerable populations, I was like, there's got to be a connection here. So that actually inspired me to go to seminary, where I studied this intersection of faith and environment. And as I was doing that, I decided, I like learning about this, but I want to do something. And so I started a bunch of garden projects in Champaign-Urbana. We had everything from the Evangelical Church, the Presbyterians, the Mosque and Islamic Center, the Mennonites. We started these garden projects as a way to bring people together, garden together, build relationships, And then talk about big issues like food justice, hunger, climate change, issues that sometimes are controversial and tense, but we built trust by eating together the produce that we were literally growing in the garden. So that work got some newspaper attention. And it was at that point that I learned about a nonprofit out of Chicago called Faith in Place. So Reverend Claire Butterfield, the founder of Faith in Place in Chicago, was having a very similar sort of experience to me. I didn't know about her, but she was organizing faith communities throughout Chicago. So she emailed me, we had lunch, we thought, why don't we combine forces? And so I was actually hired on as an organizer, the first non-Chicago organizer for the organization out of Champaign-Urbana, and did that work for 4 years and then ended up becoming the new executive director once our founder moved on to other things. So it's been a long journey for me. The last 14 years of Faith in Place, we've been growing this impact, not only in Champaign-Urbana, but like I said, across the three states.
So impressive. It's so cool. You know, you had mentioned the idea of environmental justice, and I'm guessing that might be a new concept to some of our students. Could you explain what that means and maybe just fill it in a little bit for us?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a couple ways to define this. One is, you know, the EPA or the Environmental Protection Agency has a pretty clear definition. And that definition is very much revolving around equal impact of pollution. So you think about, you know, we have diesel trucks in our communities, we have fossil fuel burning plants to provide power to our electrical grid, we have construction, development, all of these have negative environmental impacts. But the way those impacts are distributed is what we call environmental injustice. So, for example, in Illinois, the data tells us that in communities of color, they experience four times more air pollution than non-communities of color in Illinois. So we call that environmental injustice because it's disproportionate to impacts. And then environmental justice is about remedying those impacts to make them equal, regardless of class, color, whatever it may be, that the impacts are equally distributed around. So that would be a general framing of how our government thinks about environmental justice as a response to the injustices that we experience that's disproportionate.
Great. Thanks. With Faith in Place, could you talk about maybe what are the guiding philosophies or principles that move the environmental work forward?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a couple of things that's interesting. So, you know, as students, you're probably thinking about, you know, can I get a job at a nonprofit someday? So a nonprofit is an organization that's focused on doing good in the world. It's not ultimately about making money, but it's about raising money to drive impact in the community. And so a good nonprofit has some good guiding principles, not only does it have a vision and a mission of how it does that, but some good guiding principles along the way. One of the things that we strive for at Faith in Place is we're a staff team of about 30 staff spread across the three states and then working to serve our network. Right now, we have 296 active faith communities in our network that are very diverse. And they're diverse not only religiously, Muslim, Jewish, Baha'i, Christian, Catholic, you know, diversity of religions, but they're also diverse racially. And then also diverse regionally. We have rural congregations, semi-urban, urban congregations. And so one guiding principle that's important for us as a nonprofit is that our staff team reflects the diversity of the audience that we serve. So we have a diversity of regional staff, racial staff, and religious staff on our team. Well, having that diversity means that you need to really live into creating justice within your own organization so that you can serve your diverse network. And so we have a very robust, we call it our JEDI program internally. And JEDI just means justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion. We work really hard to embody the world we want to see internally as a staff so that we can turn around and serve our network and create the world we want to see externally. And that's a very important guiding principle for us. I think similarly, there's a guiding principle we call the messenger matters. We don't, you know, we work in Waukegan, Illinois, for example. It's not that we hire someone from a different, you know, not from Lake County to work in Lake County. We want someone on our team that knows the community, that understands the community, has trust in the community to really build. And so that guides our messenger matters sort of philosophy, whether we're in Northern Illinois, Central Illinois, Milwaukee, Gary, Indiana, Central Indiana, you name it. And then we also do, we follow that principle too. So I'm a Mennonite minister. I attend the Mennonite church. You know, the each of our faith communities has a different sort of ethos, a culture, a theology, dare I even say politics, that kind of comes into the institution. And so the best messenger to like my Mennonite church is going to be someone who understands that, who has a respected voice, can understand kind of that context, that history, that theology. And so that's why we use what we call a green team model as our organizing methodology. And so a green team is this, to take this example from my Mennonite church, 3 to 12 people from that community that form a committee or a green team that meets monthly, works with our staff every month to kind of implement steps towards this big picture vision and becoming the environmental racial justice leaders in the community. And so that green team becomes the messenger then to the larger community. So you see how we kind of are following that principle throughout our network. So we have those 296 active green teams that are meeting monthly, meeting with our staff monthly, implementing program projects, advocacy projects, but it's really guided by this principle of the messenger matters in the work that we do, which is really important. So you can actually check out our website. We actually list out on our about page all of the sort of guiding principles that guide us. And we can get into more of them as they come up in the course of conversation, but they're really important because to do big things in the world, it's hard. And it means that you're getting messy and you're trying to do things in a way that's bringing people together that might not typically be together. Right. And when you do big things that are hard, guiding principles kind of become your North Star that you can point to when difficulty or tension or even conflict arises. You can be like, oh, we have some guiding principles that helps us navigate this sort of path and how we go about this.
It's so, there's probably so much there to learn, especially going into communities that you're not part of and building trust. And, you know, really, if you really want to make the difference, having that buy-in and then having the people who are in those communities be the people that guide the change. And it seems like such a great model that we all could learn from, for sure. So before we get, I do want to talk about a little more detail on the projects that you do. But before we get to that, I don't want to lose, kind of still in the philosophical realm, about the different faith traditions, I think is really interesting. And maybe if you could share a little bit on, you know, kind of how you've seen the different faiths that you've interacted with, like how they view, you know, our humans' relationships with nature, and maybe where, you know, where are they different? Where are they the same? And kind of how do you pull those connections in? I don't know if I'm asking that very well, but.
Yeah, no, I think I'm following. This actually gets back to a guiding principle that I didn't mention, but let me just highlight it a little bit. So fundamentally, across all of our diverse faith traditions, we share a belief that the ecological crisis is a spiritual crisis. So let me try to unpack that a little bit. The spiritual crisis that we believe that we're all in is a crisis of disconnection. We're disconnected from ourselves, from each other, and from Earth. And the beauty of our diverse religious traditions, again, whether you're Muslim, Jewish, Baha'i, Christian, Catholic, Zoroastrian, Wiccan, is that each of our faith traditions and our religious and spirituality traditions bring a wisdom of how to heal that disconnection that we're experiencing, whether it's a healing of the disconnection we experience with ourselves, with each other, with our neighbor and community, and with Mother Earth. Each of those traditions uses different language and has different practices, but you can quickly think about your own faith tradition, the various rituals you have from showing up on a weekly sort of ceremonial sort of basis towards song, towards practice, towards water that's used in traditions. These are all sort of in the broad bucket of reconnecting, healing, coming together. Again, the language varies from tradition to tradition, but that is the essence of what I believe the wisdom that comes from our faith traditions that helps us in this moment of ecological crisis, which is really born out of this disconnection. You think about this, if you have a loved one or a family member who you care a lot about or a friend, say they're going through a crisis and something happened to them. Immediately, you want to jump up and get involved. How can we help? How can we support? Can we get you food? Can we get you resources? So it's that really that connection and care that we have with each other that you know shows us the support up for each other in community. So when we come together and we build trust and relationships across our different religious traditions, we know that when crisis comes, when there's a water shortage or when there's a heat wave or when there's something flooding that's happening in the community. We know that if we have a sense of care and respect and knowledge of each other, we will quickly act to support and serve each other. So that's kind of the basis of the philosophy that we operate by. And I think it's really powerful. And one of the most meaningful parts of the work is sitting in rooms with, you know, I could tell you about, from my vantage point as a Mennonite, what Mennonite theology kind of brings and the wisdom that we can offer to this reconnecting with one another. But it's so powerful to be in a room to hear from others, to hear from other faith traditions, the wisdom they bring, and to share that with each other can be just so inspiring to do this work. And I've experienced in all of our different faith traditions, there is a common element of an obligation that we all have to care not only for each other, but to care for our common home together. And I think that's the core of what brings us together as people of diverse faiths.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, let's dig in maybe a little bit more into, you know, some of the, what does the work look like? And could you share some of the examples of, you know, what your 96 communities are doing out there that is changing the world?
Yep. And it's 196. I don't know.
196.
196.
Sorry.
But yeah, so if you think about 196 different faith communities, they're all going to look different, right? Some have 30 members, some have 10,000 members, some own their land, some don't own their land. Some have large buildings and facilities, some don't have a building and facilities. So we really, this is another guiding principle. We meet folks where they're at. And we do first, okay, we have this vision of becoming the environmental leader in the neighborhood. What sort of assets and what sort of environmental injustices are we trying to solve for? So it does look different. Each faith community is working on different projects, but largely they fall into kind of five different buckets. One is what we call energy and climate change. So say you have a house of worship and you're looking to decrease the energy burden, the greenhouse gas emissions. So you're doing weatherizations, energy efficiency, replacing out the gas boiler to electrify, putting in solar panels, making sure the insulation, the HVAC system is the best available. And that also translates, though, not only in your house of worship, but into people's homes. We're in a moment right now where there's lots of incentives available, both from the Inflation Reduction Act, as well as the bipartisan infrastructure law on the federal level. In Illinois, for example, we have the Climate Equitable Jobs Act, which provides incentives as well for these sort of things. So we're helping a lot of our faith partners take action in the kind of energy space, clean energy, energy efficiency, electrification space. We also do a lot of work on water. Many of our faith communities are, especially in Chicago, experiencing basement flooding. And this is made worse by climate change. One of the impacts of climate change is that when it rains harder and longer. And that overwhelms our stormwater system. And this is another environmental justice issue because the communities that experience the most flooding in the communities is because they've been disinvested from in their stormwater sewer systems in their communities. So they can't handle the load of extra water coming in. And that comes back into people's basements. And so we do a lot of work around not only the education there, that this is a systemic issue, but also building cisterns, rain gardens, green water infrastructure, basically innovative sort of structure in the community that holds that rainwater when it comes. And you can actually do some pretty cool aesthetic beauty sort of stuff where you plant native plants that use up that extra amount of water. It's fun. Rain barrels is one way. We have many of our youth who paint rain barrels in the community, and then you attach that to your gutter and that holds up some water from going into the stormwater system. That can help as well. So energy and climate, water, food and land use. We do a lot of work. Just let's get outside together. Let's share stories with one another. Why are you here? Where did you come from? What's your migrant story? We connect that migrant story with that of the monarch butterfly. Students, if you get excited about learning more about the monarch butterfly, it comes from Michoacan, Mexico, flies all the way up through Chicago to Canada over the course of four generations. It's a beautiful migration story. We do that sort of migration storytelling and connect it with our own migration stories. We all come here from somewhere, and telling that story can be really powerful while being outside. We do a lot of planting of native plants for the monarch butterfly to eat milkweed as it's coming through, removing of invasive species. So these are all programs that folks can go deep on. We do garden projects. Some of our faith communities have done large scale farms, fruit and vegetable farms, where they're not only employing local farmers, but they're using their land to give local fresh produce to the local food pantries, cooking and canning classes. So food and land use, water, energy and climate. We also have a robust youth program. So for high school age youth, we're trying to help them understand different environmental career opportunities. What could that look like? How could that shape their college pursuits? But also doing field trips, environmental justice projects, teaching in the community. And then last but not least, we do advocacy, because we can only do so much in community until you're running up to against systemic issues. So, hey, we need the upfront capital to do these sort of energy projects. We need sort of the stormwater system to be invested in from the historic disinvestment. Well, that happens at the policy squares. That's why we talk to our state legislators, as well as our federal congressional folks, to help them understand the crisis of the issue and how we can solve it by working together and bringing more money into the community. So that was a lot, but there's a lot there that, but just give you a taste of, you know, each of those faith communities are working on a different aspect of that programming and advocacy work.
It is so impressive and just, you know, wide reaching in scope. And so in terms of then how the faith communities engage, it really is the local on the ground need, the probably leaders in the community, members deciding, you know, this is where the direction we want to go and how to address it then. Is that, am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah, totally. Those green team leaders, along with the clergy and community, they're really kind of driving, hey, this is what we want to work on. I'd like to give you an example, coming up a Saturday, I just got invited to two different events. One was one of our faith communities in Champaign-Urbana. They just did a huge solar project with a geothermal project as well. So they're doing a big celebration, a blessing of the panels and the geothermal system. So I got invited to that. At the same time, in the west side of Chicago in Austin, one of our faith partners has been working for years to renovate their kitchen into what they're calling an incubator kitchen project. So they wanted to create their kitchen into a commercial space that was licensed and zoned correctly, so that they can teach cooking and canning, catering classes, like ways to take local food and create a small business, because they have a need for folks to get more revenue to create small businesses, but to have a common space to go. So that's, you know, I can't go to both, but that's just like an example with a amazing network like this. You know, one community is working on a innovative incubator kitchen project. The other is installing solar panels and geothermal, you know, and just multiply that across the network. The neat thing that Faith in Place does is we view ourselves as network conveners, right? There's a not only are we supporting, but we're pulling in resources, but also connecting people together. Because by connecting together, you can realize, oh, it doesn't matter if I'm in a mosque or a synagogue or a church or a temple. Some of this sort of implementation of these things is the same sort of barriers, problems. We can share best practices, case studies, what do we learn, that sort of stuff.
Yeah. So then do members of the different green teams come together and share then? Is that how that works?
Yeah. And actually, this is a great opportunity for me to plug. We do a big annual event. It's called the Annual Environment and Spirituality Summit. It's coming up September 22nd through 24th. Anybody can join this event online. People join from all across the world. We have like 24 countries join. And it's, you know, our green teams join, but more folks, anybody who's interested in this intersection of environment and spirituality can join. If you are in Illinois, Wisconsin, or Indiana, that Sunday, the 22nd, there are in-person like watch parties, but we have a keynote speaker and then kind of workshops. Folks can log in, check them out. If you just go to the faithinplace.org website, you can get connected with that. It's the annual Environment and Spirituality Summit on September 22nd. But that is really a place where a lot of our green teams and our partners and interested individuals get together, network, share best practices. It's great.
I'm sure it's probably quite powerful too, to pull people together. So
yeah,
you know, good learning. One of the questions I had was kind of in the weeds about you know, the work with agriculture and just like food insecurity and climate change. And I'm I was kind of just skimming through the website trying to see some of your work. And you do, and you had mentioned some of the agriculture stuff. Is that, can you share a little bit more about that, like the work that's being done in terms of, especially in different, you know, talk about like food deserts and things like that. Are communities stepping forward and addressing some of that food insecurity?
Yeah, absolutely. It's super inspiring work. So I'll tell you a quick story. Back in, I don't know, it was 2011, 2012, a Lutheran church in Champaign, Urbana, began to work with Faith in Place. They had 4 acres of land, and they were farming it in traditional corn and soybeans, you know, any sort of profits they were given to a charity as a result. But we would begin to imagine, like, what would it look like if we hired local farmers, grew fruit and vegetables on this land, and then gave it to the local food pantries. And we worked on that project for, like, I don't know, it was 3 or 4 years. But we ended up launching what's called Sola Grazia Farm. And Sola Grazia Farm is, I think, now 40 acres under production. They are donating more than 30% of their produce to the Eastern Illinois Food Bank, who is working across a lot of food scarcity areas to get access to that fresh local food grown right there in their backyard. To the local food pantries. And it's like super awesome. There's not only getting more access to local, fresh, healthy food, but it's driving an economy where local farmers are getting jobs on that land, volunteer network, community is building. It's such an inspirational project, but it's not just happening there. So after we started that first farm, you know, others in our network were like, hey, how do we do that? We have land. And I still remember the day when Vernon Park Church of God, at the time, I think it was like on 88th and King Drive. There's like, we just inherited some land down in Linwood. We'd love to start a farm like Sola Grazia. So a group of individuals came down to Champaign-Urbana. And I just remember standing there in the corner of the field. And like, here you have a Southside historically African-American church hanging out with the white Lutherans in Champaign-Urbana, like on a piece of property, like talking about how do we drive more food access, local food production. I just wanted to cry, right? Like, it was such a beautiful thing. And now today, Mother Carr's Farm is thriving in Linwood, Illinois, providing CSAs. And we've supported, I forget the exact number, but it was about a half a dozen different types of farms like that that have started with faith communities, really saying, hey, we have land. How do we support our local farmers? How do we make sure the produce that's grown there is healthy, it's fresh, it's organic, it's local, and how do we get that back to the community that we serve? It's really innovative, and it's really inspiring to see faith communities lead in that sort of way.
It's so impressive. And, you know, I grew up in rural Illinois. I've lived in the city, lived in the suburbs, and there's always, I think, such a unfounded tension sometimes in the politics of the state of Illinois, downstate, city. Right. But I think for those of us that have been in across the state, recognize the strength that we share when we're all actually working together. What a great example of doing that. So it's fantastic. I do want to watch our time, but you know, I'm interested in the political work in the political life of our state. And I know that you guys, as you mentioned, do such advocacy. And you had mentioned to me earlier before we started recording some of the green jobs initiatives. And I thought maybe just to ask about that, because I think, you know, that's something, especially, you know, our students, all of us can advocate to our legislators about the importance of that. Could you help fill in the kind of pieces if that's not too much?
No, absolutely. I think it's so one thing about when you're bringing people of diverse faiths together, there's a lot of what I would call intersectional thinking that happens. So as we think about solving climate change, we need to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. But when we're in those rooms and there's a diversity of folks, we think, okay, we reduce greenhouse gas emissions through solar panels, wind, geothermal, efficiency, improving our transportation, moving off of fossil fuels. All of that is going to mean both job loss and also job creation. So how do we do that in a justice lens? How do we make sure that we're solving for climate change while also making sure those that are suffering the most from climate change's impacts also benefit from the solutions? And so that sort of thinking led us in the creation of what's known as the Climate Equitable Jobs Act that was passed in 2021 in Illinois. to create what we're calling workforce hubs. So right now we're working very hard with the Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity to roll out 13 workforce clean energy jobs, workforce hubs across Illinois. So that ranges from Metro East of St. Louis to Carbondale, to, you know, Champaign, Danville, the Quad Cities to Waukegan. You know, you look on a map, there's kind of 13 hubs that are coming together. And the idea there is if you want to get involved as an electrician in HVAC or working in wind or solar, you can go to one of these hubs and get the training that you need. And then there's a additional money to support kind of what we call wraparound services. So maybe you're looking for a job, but you need affordable housing or you need childcare or you need some sort of counseling services. So there's also like wraparound services made available. And then when you get out of one of these training systems, in the law, we created a mechanism that the solar developers and the solar installers need to hire so many people coming out of these training systems. So it's not like you're going to get trained and then you're out in the street and you still can't find a job. There is actually incentives built in so that when employers hire those folks, they get additional state incentives. So it's a really neat way of thinking through how do we take high unemployment neighborhoods. You know, in Chicago, we have some neighborhoods that have 20%+ unemployment. Well, those neighborhoods are going to be near some of these workforce hubs. So we can start to bring back good paying jobs in these communities as we create the kind of green revolution or green economy in solar and wind and HVAC and electrical and these sort of things. So that's a really exciting thing. It's something that Faith in Place and other advocates are working on daily in the implementation phase. But I think a really innovative sort of intersectional thinking that's led to some really cool programming in the community.
It's always so amazing that the great work that's going on that we don't even know about. I mean, obviously you know about that, but like you know, the General Assembly moves this along and it's just kind of invisible. So I'm glad you're able to share that with us. To kind of just pull things together, you know, what do you see for the future of Faith in Place and, you know, hopefully our environment? Like what's next and where do you want to go?
Yeah, I think my conviction is that the faith communities that are thriving and vibrant are really, if I can say, living their faith in place. They are, you know, active in the community, becoming leaders in the community. And in the environmental movement, because we passed federal legislation, IRA and IJA, we say, which is the Inflation Reduction Act and the Bipartisan Infrastructure Act, this is a lot of money coming that's intended to come for projects and community. And so I think as faith partners, we have a great opportunity to raise our hands and say, we're in community, we want to do projects that benefit the community, that when the heat waves are high, when the air pollution is high, when folks are struggling with cooling, when folks, you know, need access to local healthy food in the community, or just understanding of the services that our faith institutions are really there to say, we got you. We're a hub of knowledge, information, and programming. We have the battery storage. We have the access to the local food healthy ecosystem. We have the cooling because we're strong with geothermal and with solar, to be really resiliency hubs in the community. I think those are the faith communities that are going to continue to thrive because they're showing the way. They're showing what it means to live their faith in place and to do that. So I'm excited about that future. We're working every day to help our faith communities live into that vision, and to continue to lead the way forward.
If our students or anyone listening wanted to get involved, how can they connect?
Yeah, definitely go to faithinplace.org, sign up for our newsletter. That'd be the first way. And then you'll start to find events that are happening near you. If you're at a house of worship and you're like, I really want to get my house of worship involved in the Faith in Place network, please reach out. On our website, you'll see that we have a lot of outreach staff. Reach out to the one that's closest to you and just send them a note saying, I heard Brian speak and I want to get my house of worship more involved. Let me know how to do that. And they'll get back to you. If you can't find the right staff person, send me a note, brian@faithinplace.org, and I'll get you connected up. And we look forward to hearing from you.
Well, that's great. Well, let me just say, I've learned a lot. Thank you so much for your time and just for your work out there in the community and impacting the globe. So thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you, Troy. It's been great to talk with you and talk with everybody that's watching.